David Reynolds, author of the Bancroft Prize-winning cultural biography of Walt Whitman and many other works of 19th century American history, understands the currents in which Abraham Lincoln swam. His new biography, Abe, Abraham Lincoln in His Times, is the product of full-body immersion into the riotous tumult of American life in the decades before the Civil War. An enduring theme of Lincoln's life, Reynolds shows, was his genius for striking a balance between opposing forces. Lacking formal schooling, but with an unquenchable thirst for self-improvement, Lincoln had a talent for wrestling and bawdy jokes that made him popular with his peers, even as his appetite for poetry and his gifts for memorization set him apart from them through his childhood, his years as a lawyer, and his entrance into politics. Reynolds looks to show us the extraordinary range of cultural knowledge that Lincoln drew from as he shaped a vision of true union, transforming, in Martin Luther King Jr.'s words, the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. David Reynolds is a distinguished professor at the Graduate Center of the City University at New York. His new book, Abe, Abraham Lincoln in His Time, and on this election day, we welcome David Reynolds to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Great to be here, Joe. Thank you.
So give us a sense on this election day of the, it just seemed like the perfect time to talk to you about this amazing book that you've written about Abraham Lincoln, of what brought you to the project.
I've written books about Walt Whitman and Harriet Beecher Stowe and John Brown and several others. So I've been writing about his era, the era of Abraham Lincoln, for a long time. And partly with the encouragement of my publisher, but also because of my interest, I just thought I would turn to the greatest president that we've had and view him from my own perspective, the perspective of his own era, his own culture. Because even though there have been more than 16,000 books written on Lincoln, and many of them are superb, wonderful books, none of them, you can read book after book and not hear about people like Harriet Beecher Stowe and Walt Whitman and so many others, Edgar Allan Poe. But these were the writers of his era and also writers that he was aware of. He memorized Poe's The Raven, and he loved popular humor. He also memorized Shakespeare by the page. He had a pretty good hard disk for a brain. Once he read something, it pretty much stuck there. So quite often he would just come out with poetry, recite poetry that was very meaningful to him. Not because he wanted to brag, it's just because these passages meant so much to him. And that's the kind of Lincoln that was really the real Lincoln and the cultural Lincoln that has been by and large neglected in the biographies of him.
As I mentioned, the subtitle of the book is Abraham Lincoln in His Times. And what you really show in this book, a man who at each stage in his life managed to arrive at a broader view of things than most of those around him.
Yeah. For example, in 1835, when he was in his 20s, only in his 20s, this was 13 years before this famous Seneca Falls Convention, in which women and some men got together and demanded the vote for women and also for merit, property rights and so forth. But Lincoln in 1835 said, you know, I think women should have the vote. And for someone to say that so early, now women, of course, did not get the vote until 1920. It would be a long struggle. But for him to think about that, and also he believed that women were being sexually exploited. He thought that women who were seduced by men to have sexual relations in that era were kind of cast out from society, and a lot of them became sex workers because they were considered fallen. And he said, you know, that's just not right. I mean, the man is also culpable as well. That's just kind of one example. And on slavery, he was very forward-thinking. He always hated slavery as much as any of the most radical abolitionists of his era. He was a politician, however, so he had to kind of walk a tightrope. There was a famous tightrope walker named Blondin who crossed Niagara Falls many times, sometimes on stilts and sometimes backwards at night and everything, sometimes with a man on his back. And Lincoln actually compared himself to Blondin. He lived in such a divided time that he knew the worst thing that he could do at that moment was to pour gas on the division, as we would say, pour gasoline on the flames of division. And he said, you know, I hate slavery very much, but I have to be a little cautious because there were so many conservatives back then who were calling him someone who wanted to create a huge racial revolution in this country and all of that. And they were really caricaturing him, quite wrongly. You know, he didn't want a complete revolution, but he wanted equality. He wanted equality, but they perceived it as kind of a reversal in relations between people. But so he had to be quite cautious. And even during the Civil War, when some people came to him and said, why don't you make this more explicitly an anti-slavery war from the beginning? Eventually it became that, but at the beginning he had to make it a war for the Union. And he said, look, if I were Blondin pushing my wheelbarrow across Niagara Falls, would you tell me to step left or step right? You'd say, no, just keep where you are. And during the war he had to be very careful because there were five border states. One of them was Kentucky, another was Tennessee, a couple of and three others that had slavery, and yet they were loyal to the North. But at any moment, one of them could topple into the Confederacy. And he said, you know what? If I lose Kentucky, I'm going to lose everything. We're going to lose this war. You know, and it was very, very dicey. So he had to keep on his tightrope as much as he hated slavery.
You have a chapter in which you talk about Blondin in the book that is, it's fascinating. It's called Blondin, Barnum, and Bohois. So tell us about the P.T. Barnum example, too. What does he have to do with Lincoln, the great showman of the day, of course?
Right, yeah. Well P.T. Barnum, in a sense, invented show business. He put on display people that back then were considered to be oddities or curiosities or something. We would not do that nowadays, but he put on display an African-American woman that he said was 161 years old, and she had been the nanny of George Washington. Turns out she was only about 73 when she died. But anyway, he hoodwinked the public, and he presented the Fiji mermaid. He displayed her in posters as this beautiful, curvaceous, half-naked blonde woman. It turns out it was a monkey's torso tied to a salmon's tail, suspended in water with a little blonde wig. But the people would pay to see these oddities, and they like spectacle. They love spectacle. And Lincoln, in a way, kind of made fun of himself as being the ugliest guy around. Actually, he wasn't that ugly, but people considered him homely, but when he went to speak, he would often, in a way, assume a kind of clownishness as at the beginning of his speeches to kind of attract the sensation lovers. And during the 1860 election, he was kind of put on display as the Illinois rail splitter. And by that now, he had been a frontiersman. He was raised on the frontier in Kentucky and Indiana. But by the time he ran for election, he had been for 25 years a respectable lawyer who wore, you know, nice suits and ties and everything. But he allowed himself to be displayed as Abe. He didn't like the name Abe, but he said, without the name Abe, I never would have been elected, because there he was on all the posters with his sleeves rolled up, and he's chopping wood. outside near a log cabin. And by that time in his life, it was a myth, it was a legend, a myth. But the masses bought the image, kind of like the way they bought Barnum.
Yeah.
And they bought that image, and he was kind of sold as old Abe, Uncle Abe.
It is fascinating because you talk about that he allowed himself to be advertised as Old Abe and Honest Abe and Abe the Illinois Rail Splitter. It reminded me of the classic Bob Newhart routine where Abe Lincoln is talking to a media specialist about, you know, wearing the shawl and writing on the backs of envelopes. So there really was some showmanship to the guy.
Yeah, there was. He was very conscious of what the people liked, what the popular culture liked. Not that he was dishonest. He was a very honest person, but he was aware of image. And besides, his heart really was with the people. He loved popular humor, and he would memorize popular jokes. Some of them were even a little bit dirty or whatever. But, I mean, he really could and he loved meeting people, just average people, and talking to them in a very sincere way. So, in his case, it wasn't a false image in the same sense that, let's say, William Henry Harrison in the 1840 log cabin campaign. Harrison actually lived in a 16-room mansion in Michigan, but they said he was from a one-room log cabin and drank hard cider and everything. So in that case, it was totally mythical. But in the case of Lincoln, he actually had chopped many, many logs early in his life, so he said, "Okay, fine, let's go with that."
David Reynolds is our guest on the roundtable. His new book is Abe, Abraham Lincoln in His Times. It is published by Penguin Press. I just want to go back because being a completist here, I want to just make sure, because I didn't know it. I'm assuming some people in the audience don't know it as well, but I mentioned the chapter Blonde and Barnum and Behoys. I did not know of that third term until reading your book.
Yeah, well, the Behoys, that was the name for working class males, and also the female companion was called the Gehel, the Behoys and the Gehels. And these were, the butchers and the day laborers and the kind of working class figures of that era, and it began on the streets of New York, but then became a national figure, so that the suckers, as they were called in Illinois, that's named after, like, Lincoln was both a sucker and a Hoosier, because he was both from Illinois and from Indiana. Indiana with the Hoosiers, and every state had this kind of thing. But they all were absorbed in this image, working class image of the Behoy. And when Walt Whitman in 1855, which is before the election, presented himself as one of the roughs in his poetry, one of the roughs, turbulent, drinking, breeding. Walt Whitman was none of those things at all, but he was called the Behoy poet because he identified with the working class. And when Lincoln comes along and is presented as the Illinois rail splitter and the sucker and the Hoosier and everything, he himself really attracts this Behoy culture, this young America, and he wins it over from his rival, Stephen Douglas, the Democrat. Back then, the Democrats were the conservatives and the Republicans were the liberals. And Stephen Douglas was this quite racist guy who is the opponent of Lincoln. And he had been the champion of young America, but Lincoln won young America, and then a whole organization called the Wide Awakes were these Behoys who would dress up in oilskin coats, and we wouldn't like it nowadays because they would march around with torches at night. Well, we have a different conception of, you know, people with torches, but back there, yeah, they would march around at night and really go crazy over Abe.
So you write in the book, obviously, about this, about Lincoln and overseeing this most incredible divided time in this country. And where the divisions led to civil war. So on this election day, without being overtly political, we'll we'll hold that for tomorrow and days in the future, where I'm sure we'll talk much more about the partisan politics. But as far as the of the time, I mean, it's hard not to read this book and see parallels.
Yeah, we live in a very polarized and divided time. There's no doubt about it. But he lived in a time when, well, when he was elected, 11 states literally left America. They formed the Confederate States of America. He never accepted the fact that they were a different nation, but they saw themselves a bit. They had their own constitution, their own president, their own Congress, their own, you know. And they formed on the basis of slavery and states' rights, you know. When they took over a federal fort that was part of America, Lincoln said, no, you can't tamper with federal property. So he called up 75,000 troops, and they had a four-year bloody civil war. Now, even though he went to war against the South, he never publicly said bad things about Southerners. In fact, he said, you know, if we were in their position, we'd probably act the same way that they did. So, and he believed in what he called, in the second inaugural address, malice toward none, charity to all. So even though he was waging war and trying to gain military victory over the South, which he eventually did, he did it really in the name of restoring the Union, restoring the American Union. He was all about togetherness. And this is also why he remained blonde and why he didn't come out strongly in his language about people of differing opinions, different political opinions. So, yeah,
it
kind of applies to today as well, yeah.
I mean, the takeaway, too, is that how much he was concerned about human rights, of how that was really a very much a part of him, that justice, that human justice that he had in mind.
Yeah, he had a fundamental belief in the Declaration of Independence, where it says all men, we would say all men and women, are created equal. And he that was his fundamental faith, religion, so to speak, that, you know, we're all equal, we're all in this together. And that applied to people of different ethnicities and of different religions. He got along with Jewish people as well as Catholics. He got along with Irish as well as Germans. He was quite close to African Americans such as Sojourner Truth and Martin Delaney and eventually Frederick Douglass. And a good number of others that lived around him in Springfield. So, yeah, and he was the first president to actually, in public, call for the vote for African Americans. And so he did that actually 4 days before he died. And someone in the audience, John Wilkes Booth, heard that and was Booth was a Southerner who was a total white supremacist, and he was absolutely disgusted by that idea, and he said, I'm going to put him through now. A few days later he killed Lincoln. But Lincoln in a way died for human rights.
As you said, there's so many books written about Lincoln, and this is a beautiful addition to that. What did you take away from the experience of writing about him in such depth?
I had sort of doubts about Lincoln for certain things that he said early on in his career when he was in a conservative atmosphere in Illinois and trying to go in. So I was a little questioning about him, and also I thought that somehow he was sort of kind of by himself in a certain rare atmosphere. But it turns out that he was actually very deeply, as I hadn't found this out in previous books, but that he was very, very deeply involved in the total culture of his time. And Emerson, I found a passage where Ralph Waldo Emerson said, you know, Lincoln is the one person, one politician who encompasses the entire range of culture from the highest. For example, he loved Shakespeare and he enjoyed opera, to kind of the lowest. He liked kind of dirty jokes, and also until the very Emerson said, until the very dogs believed in him. It was something I had never seen before, and that was my takeaway. His openness, it was a real democratic openness that I had not seen in anybody else except Walt Whitman. But the difference was is that Lincoln actually put this into political force. He actually ran for office. Walt Whitman, you know, wrote poetry, beautiful poetry, but he didn't. In fact, Whitman envisaged a president who would come from the West. It was then the West, Illinois was, and come across the Alleghenies and march right into, you know, and enter the White House. And that's what happened. 4 years later, Lincoln was elected, and Whitman absolutely adored Lincoln and wrote so eloquently about him. So, yeah. I really came away with Lincoln's sense of true democracy.
The name of the book is Abe, Abraham Lincoln in His Times, by the acclaimed historian David Reynolds. The book is published by Penguin Press. David, a great honor to have you on the program today. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe, very much.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Abe, Abraham Lincoln in His Times. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.